podcast with the real world meets the digital world as we explore the intersection of spatial computing and AI. Let's welcome our host, Andrew Ballard. Over to you, AB.
Well, g'day, and welcome back to Spatial. This is episode 24, coming to you after, yes, a minor hiatus again. Apologies, I do often have things called work and out-of-town-isms. Apologies, but we're back on a regular schedule with this episode and one booked in for next week and the following week. So, awesome. With me today, I have the great pleasure of chatting once again, not with Spatial, but back in old-school territory here with Grant Case. Grant Case is Vice President, Sales Engineering at DataIQ, Australia, Pacific, Japan. Oh, look, your title is long and varied. I'll let you introduce yourself. Grant, welcome to Spatial.
Thanks, Andrew. Hi, everybody. I'm Grant Case. I am the Regional Vice President for Sales Engineering here at DataIQ. For myself, I work in the sales engineering, solution engineering space where I spend most of my time with clients across the region, but particularly here in ANZ, where we talk to organizations, both large and small, in and around analytics and AI. I've been in with DataIQ for the last 6 years, but I've been doing everything analytics, AI. Before we were calling it AI, it was all statistics, right, Andrew?
It's just math in the end.
It's just math. It's just matrix. It's ones and zeros. But I've been doing it for the past 20 years across multiple different industries, and quite a bit of that spending time within different domains, whether we're talking about NLP, we're talking about machine learning, but also GIS has always been a very interesting background and interesting set of projects that I've worked with. So happy to be aboard.
Oh, legendary, legendary. So 6 years, yeah, 6 years at DataIQ. I must say at the outset, I'm going to do the Australian way. By all means, you do the North American DataIQ. For those not
the accent is from Queensland, right? Northern Queensland?
Very far north Queensland.
No. But obviously Queensland. From the US.
For the record, Aussies versus Americans, the data versus data. So we Aussies have problems talking about data, the character in Star Trek versus data, the character of Star Trek. That's always wrong. But at the same time, we can figure out the difference between routing and route, which is nice. So we lose on one tech term, but we gain on the other. So that's
exactly.
It's a net neutral. So that's nice. Yeah. 6 years at DataIQ. I think I was chatting to you pretty much the month that you started. This is back before COVID, BC, and before the current sort of situation. You were, DataIQ was one of those tools, is one of those tools that for me is still pure magic to sort of, vaguely quote Arthur C. Clarke, technology that's indiscernible from magic is just, a joy to use. And that's really what it is. It's a walk-up tool that does everything data related. And yes, everything is a big claim, but it really is. I've been describing it to people with the catchy non-catchphrase of it's the no code, low code, and pro code. It sort of doesn't lock you out of doing it the hard way if you want, or doing it low code, which is the title of this episode. We'll definitely come back to that if we do manage to. Low code is the graphical point click. No less powerful, but certainly if you need to do something quickly, look, that goes to that. But the thing that really blew my mind, and you're probably going to blow my mind even more because I haven't caught up with the DataIQ world for a year probably, is the no code. Just press a button and have everything done for you. Do you want to give us a rundown on where DataIQ is and where it sits, what the adoption is?
I'm going to put you right in front of a client because you did a great job of it. So as a platform, we look at organizations today and try and understand that there are different levels of maturity, the different personas. So anyone from just someone who just needs to consume a dashboard all the way up to someone like yourself, Andrew, that's getting in, messing, fine tuning on, different NLP algorithms, they all need to work together.
Yeah.
Right. So DataIQ is the AI platform to bring all of those individuals together across multiple different technologies. So everybody works the way that's best for them. obviously, just from a pure number standpoint, we have more low code and no code users. That's just the way of the world.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
cool. But the need is for everyone to be able to access. So, yeah. So we're actually just announced as a leader in the Gartner Magic Quadrant this past year and are a few months ago. And we are the furthest along on completeness of vision in many ways because of what, you know, the title of this episode is talking about those low code and no code users and how do you bring some of the sophisticated things that we were doing, you know, you and I were maybe doing 5 years ago, maybe even 2 years ago in code. And now it's run of the mill. Anyone can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And those three different levels of approaches are vital because yes, even if you have someone doing the pro code, the full on way, how do you pass that down neatly to people who just want to get in and use the damn thing? And then there's the moral majority who don't even know that they want to use it. And you can have them in the no code mode where they just, you know, press a button and it's done for them. They don't even need to know. You know, the magic is just there.
And I think that's,
The realm of the data science, data analyst has traditionally been a bit of a loner, not by choice, but by I've set up my environment. How many years ago would it have been my hotted up PC with the water cooled GPU was the way to go? Those days have gone, thank goodness. Then it was okay, I'm buying 35 minutes of time on a beast of a machine in a cloud. And now it's like, okay, I've got to play nice with the rest of the organization. Quite a challenge to flip that around. So it's nice to just have a place where people can do what they need to do. And if need be, and I'll say this nicely, get into what they need and then go back to work as opposed to spend all day going, love us.
And to be fair, especially as we talk in these different problem sets right now, what ends up happening, so I've been around this block enough times to know that the things that the pro coders are used to do, and it was only them, now that becomes run of the mill. And now those folks don't want to deal with that. So, if you, over time, then it becomes, hey, it becomes a problem. I need the data or I need you to do this or add this in. And to be fair, Dan Kinney, who is a good friend of mine and in the United States, he is the commercial data science leader for all of Janssen Pharmaceuticals, a division of Johnson & Johnson. He makes a comment, you know, especially pro coders, they want to do one turn of the crank, right? So they want to get it to run.
Yeah.
And then they want to go away.
Yeah.
But if they're sitting there maintaining it, what happens? They get bored and everybody that wants to do something, they got to do it, and they're banging on the door. Right. So
it's nice to be a builder or an architect, but I'll again, take out the dagger from the back in a second. It's not nice to have to be a plumber or a tradie to have to maintain the thing for the next 20 years. It's nice to be able to drop it, leave, and then move on. Dataiku has traditionally sat, and its sweet spot is tabular data, Excel, spreadsheets, databases, text, numbers, the whole lot. Again, brilliant example that might blow some minds is you can load up and do your data engineering, mashing, on-the-fly fixing of data, and just say, I'm going to go to lunch, but I want to figure out why my sales or my widgets aren't working and do all the models in the next hour. Even though, you probably know that half of them are ridiculous, but do it all. And by the time you come back, it's all been done. Sometimes it can confirm what you're thinking and you get, internet points. Sometimes it can actually validate or invalidate what you're thinking and you might learn something. So tabular is home turf without fail. I know you were just moving into multimodal, into images and rich data, rich media, especially with NLP and audio there a few years ago. Can I stretch that question into how far are you now leaning into richer, multimodal, deeper nested data, into spatial data?
I think that's a great question. And we always hear about the 80% of the data is sitting in unstructured locations. I think the one thing I've seen over the last 18 months, and this was with GPT-3.5 coming on. I had started to play with GPT-3 when it came out, and it was really blown away. But once you got into a service and OpenAI really releasing that, that's when pretty much all of these unstructured use cases completely opened up, right? Yep. Because this was something that was really hard, took a lot of effort, and really expensive. So you and I were both working on a use case a few years ago where you're in the back corner and doing something and it's really edge. Now that same use case, you know, I can pump that into, Llama 3.1 out of the box, and I'd probably get better, results out of it today.
Absolutely.
Right. With the no fine tuning. So to me, what we have seen over the last 18 months has really opened that up. And especially when it comes to spatial, right? When we talk about spatial, the first use case I ever heard about, true, really interesting use case for me, I worked personally, I was doing, where do I put business bankers across the country? Because in a former life, I was working for Citigroup. And I was taking all of this tabular data and trying to bring that together and understanding. But think about that, that same problem now. I can actually just show it them. I can show something like the map, right?
So, and say, here's the continental USA.
Yeah.
Color indicates density, coverage, yada, yada. Combined with population and GDP, where are my next five pins going to go? It's going to have a red hot guess. And chances are it'll get pretty close. Pin, pun intended. It won't be off. It won't be hallucinating. It won't give you all in Alaska, all in Hawaii. It will actually give a reasonable answer for the human to then come along and assess and figure out whether that's an excellent guess. Follow-up questions might get you there. By the time you've, had your first cup of coffee for the day, problem could well be solved.
Yeah. And again, I think that is the key when we're talking about this, is a lot of the legwork, especially on the spatial side, that you would have to do to get this stuff ready for a traditional machine learning model, even 18 months ago, 2 years ago, is now gone.
True. Right? True. So even doing boring, adding lat longs to a tabular data set and starting to say, okay, now draw me a map, now get to the, a few years ago, that would have been incomprehensible. The data chain would have been dodgy, hard work, and three weeks later, you would have been tearing your hair out.
Yeah. I'll give you a good example. So I was working with an airport client here in the region, and part of the proof of concept is like I needed lat longs for a number of different airports across the region. I gave it to the, I just pumped it into the LLM. It's like, we don't have to go search for that data. Obviously it's out there someplace, but it's sitting inside the large language model. And you just ask, here's your row of data. Give me that answers in and around it. So for me, especially when we talk about that low code, no code user, that was me at the beginning, beginning of my career as an analyst, is how do I get my job done and I leave and I go off, right? So the LLMs have really opened that up. And especially for any sort of GIS analyst at this point, used to be, to do this sort of work, you'd have to go have an Esri or an ArcGIS to do a lot of that kind of low-end work. Yep. We saw a little of that visualization come in with the Tableaus and Qlik's, and I could start to overlay a couple of maps. But now,
again, but we can skip those steps.
Yeah, you can skip them. And that's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah. I love the fact that GPT 3.5 was good, was great. You could ask it to write the entire essay. More point, it wouldn't go crazy by the end. It could do 3,000-5,000 words and keep on point. But it was slow. You could almost watch it as it was forming the words. The start of this year, we basically went to crazy fast. And I must say, that's been another epoch that we've talked about here on the show, previous episode, where ironically now it's up to the human to try and catch up with what you just asked. You can say, give it to me like this, and bang, okay, give me a few minutes now to figure out what you just did and ask the next sensible question. Before you had time to formulate the next sensible question, you almost had time to think about five questions in terms of going so slow or smaller chunks. You can now, Anthropic Claude, you can say, write me a web app on the side that does this and I can deploy it to blah, blah, blah. That almost is 3 months old, that kind of technology.
Yeah.
We haven't seen the same from OpenAI. Sure, they'll all be copying and releasing any day now.
For the record, we got Gemma 1.5 Pro, and now up over. So again, I think to your point, the epochs are increasing in, you know, decreasing the amount of time between them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it used to be 2 months.
Yep.
Now we're seeing it every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The chat leaderboards for LLMs are taking off. They have subcategories in them for math, for text, for understanding. They haven't yet, although I'll start a bit of a trend for spatial, but certainly spatial it's got a few meanings. So by all means, happy to take any of them. One, of course, is that geospatial mapping, laying out, understanding concepts. You would have had to run to a graph database earlier to figure out this is connected to this, you know. You don't need to know the highway between town A and town B, but there is a line between them. You know, there are relationships between these dots on a map. They're not just random noise. We're now going to not just two-dimensional spatial, but three-dimensional spatial. Oh my God. What is behind that? Can you figure out what's behind the chair in this image? Mm-hmm. Things like that are now getting towards possible. Is Dataiku going down the path of open format, open APIs, and connecting to anything and everything? Where is its special source? Where's the sweet spot that it's coming up with its, I guess, architecture?
And I think that's for us, and this has been a long-term strategy. So you can go back 10 years from our founding. And at the very beginning, it has always been, how do we make the best use of whatever compute resources, storage is available for the client, because our secret sauce is getting every people together and actually being able to use and do things. So when we talk about, especially, open source capabilities around GIS, if we're talking about data sources, if we're talking about LLMs, there's value, especially for many of our enterprise clients, of being able to do all. So right now, I'm working with a customer in the Singaporean government. They are hypersensitive about being in the cloud. They need to be completely on-prem. Well, you're not going to be able to use OpenAI, right? That or Anthropic, but you are going to be able to use something like, Llama 3.1.
Yeah.
Right. So, So for us, it's playing all of the fields, knowing full well that, As a technology, obviously we sell our wares into organizations, but we make use of a lot of open source capabilities. At last count, I think we had about 349 open source libraries, packages, and applications as a part of our acknowledgments. But that also goes to our ethos: is we don't necessarily, we're selling our wares and we're not open source ourselves, but we also have to be able to be as open as possible to others, just from an ethos perspective.
Yeah.
If you go to scikit-learn, its website, and you go scroll down to the bottom, there's all, here's Microsoft and NVIDIA and a couple of others. Here's a little bitty Dataiku. Funny thing, scikit-learn started in Paris. That's where we started, and that's where our four founders, everybody knows each other, that ecosystem. So,
gotcha.
So again, I think for us, and to be fair, anybody, you should be open to both those closed proprietary and open source. And I see the value in both.
Yeah.
But as we've seen, this stuff's moving so fast, you got to be able to go both.
That's it. The rate of change. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, by staying, agnostic, by staying ready to just embrace and roll with all of the different possible options. I can recall a version of Dataiku I played with early, installed locally. I guess that's still achievable, but not as the main course. Is the mainstay cloud 1, 2, 3, or is it,
still both. So again, you know, so we now have cloud. And again, I think this is indicative of the entire, ecosystem, right? So you have to be able to do both. You know, some organizations have completely gone to the cloud. So, one of our partners, Databricks, or two of our partners, Databricks and Snowflake, they're both cloud-based systems and they don't want to do anything on-prem. But we as an organization know that, you need a cloud instance for those who need to, start and go. And guess what? You can be up and running in, 20 minutes and starting to do your work. Flip side of that is you may want to run on your local machine, as you well did. And then you can run in the cloud and run on a self-hosted or even on your data center. If you've got a Hadoop instance still out there, and God help you if you do.
Okay. So, but COBOL is finally out, is it?
It depends. There's still people using it. I don't think anybody's doing anything new,
I did end up playing with a client who was using COBOL, and my first question was, hang on, are we talking green screens or orange screens? I said, orange. Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
There is hope. It was pretty rough. That was a, 30, 40 year old bit of technology that should have been upgraded, 27 years before. Good, clean fun. What are the sort of things that you're playing with? What are the new things that expand your mind? I know, the Data IQ Realm was one of the tools 6 years ago that really, showed me that there are much faster ways. Or more the point, I'm very happy to bury my old code knowledge, keep it as a pattern or as a, yes, I used to know that language backward or that technique backwards, but I was more than happy to say goodbye to skills in favor of reaching for the next skills. What are the things that really have expanded your mind and, mind equals blown view?
Mind equals blown view. I think right now things, so funny for me is one of the more interesting things I'm seeing right now is digital twinning. So digital twins were the idea and the concept to have just, I'm mimicking whatever my infrastructure is and how do I start to interact with it. Had a great conversation with John Blick, who is one of NAB's kind of thought leaders in this realm, probably about 2 years ago. And he talked about how do you encompass an entire knowledge base of someone into and make that available. In effect, he was talking about this concept and idea of LLMs maybe a little bit before his time.
Right.
But this idea of how can I encompass an entire, system itself or even a person in a way that makes I can start to interact with it. To me, that's probably the most interesting aspect I'm seeing right now. So, not a digital twin
as in a replication of a city, but as of a
It could system, be both.
A systemic. Could,
yeah. Yeah. So you. If you think about it, right, I can digital twin my network. I can digital twin a city. I could digital twin an oil refinery. I can now even really getting into the concept of digital twinning an individual, right? So think about the
volunteering.
That's the crazy part about all of this. So for me, that, being able to encompass all of that makes for an incredibly interesting. So you start thinking about how do I interact from just to kind of play in the GIS space, disaster recovery, a tsunami hits northern Queensland, right? What infrastructure is impacted? What are the chances or what are the probabilities that a substation is going to fail in this area? We saw this in Cairns, probably 3 or 4 months ago with all of the flooding, right? A lot of what's going on and what's happening is being able to look in and understand the impacts of those well ahead of time. We've seen that, especially in if you go into SCADA systems, into, places like oil, oil pipelines, refineries, going into electrical systems, these are things that have always everywhere. Been there.
Yeah.
So to me, go ahead.
This is going beyond theory. I know in manufacturing circles, having sensors in places using AI to do outlier, when you have a bad day, you can circle on the chart, that was a bad day. Tell me when we are approaching a bad day again. But those are full of sensors. They're already connected by virtue of they're the things that are turning things off or on. How do you translate that up to, well, bank-sized or system or enterprise? Is that still, here you go, how many years in the future are we talking, or is it here in?
It's here, it's now. So a great example of this is Western Digital is one of our customers, and they have a high-speed assembly line, a manufacturing line of hard drives. So they have computer vision cameras sitting over the top going through them, and it's immediate, you know, just being able to use the sensor, you know, being able to do that computer vision, understand if there is, you know, some sort of circuitry that has, you know, a defect, being able to immediately pull that off the line. That's here today. There is, you know, steel manufacturers being able to understand this is all based in, you know, chemicals and numbers and all of that, being able to understand, you know, what the hot roll is coming off and what is the purity of that steel and what's necessary. That's that's being done right now, you know, by just modeling instead of somebody having to take a measurement.
Yeah. So rather than having to rely on, yes, years of knowledge and a bit of finger in the air and feedback that follows information being close to real time and
changing. And again, the settings. I think that's, you know, you said like, hey, without years of training and experience, I still think that training and experience is still incredibly valid. If it's kind of the fact you have to know what the underlying math is to understand, you know, what's impacting your problem, right? So there's still, maybe I don't have to, it's in many ways, yes, a lot of engineers can sit down and still do, you know, Calc 3 and differentials and all of that good fun stuff, but, you know, there's a lot of applications that can help.
So it sounds like humans are rising up the knowledge curve and we're passing more and stuff, more things down into the data realm. What are the roadblocks to that? Data quality, data governance,
finding same old.
Or right? Can we just go straight to the LLM, a enterprise LLM, and have it have read everything that our organization's done and give a semi-decent answer to a really dumb question?
Yeah. Well, again, I think, you know, it's always garbage in, garbage out, right? So, and to be fair, what I've seen from the LLMs so far, they don't particularly do well with, you know, here's a tabular set of data and go figure out the numbers. If you upload something into an LLM, what is it going to do? It's going to try to do a bunch of statistics and math and try to create those insights, right? Those are the sorts of things we can do anyway, but they're not as great with math. And, you know, with your context windows being so small, you think about a good size Excel spreadsheet that would be beyond pretty much the context window of an entire model, right? Now start adding 250 sheets to that, or, doing a year's worth of data on it you start to up. So to me, there's still value there in understanding kind of both senses of what's going on and what's happening.
Yeah. No, their windows are expanding rapidly, which is nice, but they're definitely not database size. There's a reason why we have large stores of databases and highly redundant. I can recall that Data.IQ would always take a look down in columns and have an educated guess at what things were. Can it start to do that with richer data sets now? Can it sort of be looking ahead and saying, so file-based systems and extracting data and pulling that into, is it a central file format that it uses, or it just describes what it sees and the human to come along?
It's a lot of description of what we're seeing. So, you know, let's take the concept of structured versus unstructured. We've been adding additional functionality into the tool to understand, obviously, the descriptive statistics, you know, min, median, mode, max, standard deviations, you know, IQRs, all of that good fun stuff when we talk about, you know, numbers, right? But what we're seeing now is, you know, we've been adding this functionality is what you do with unstructured data, because typically that has been, you know, what is the data drift inside of a column of text? That becomes an interesting question, right?
Impossible to ask. Yeah, it still would be a rough one, but
But that is now, you know, available, yeah. right? So we've got, you know, part of being able to understand an LLM is to evaluate the drift and what, you know, what the it's responding with, right? So to me, this becomes the interesting aspect is now a lot of that feedback, you know, turning the unstructured into structured.
Okay.
As my alarm for goes off for 2:45. That's typically my son picking him off up. But yeah. But getting back to it, to me, that's DataIQ has always been on this forefront of helping people understand what their data says. So whether that is, you know, describing what it is or describing the governance around of what it is. So you made the comment, do we need to know data or do we need to do data governance? Guess what? It's always there. It's always been there and it'll continue to be there. I tell this story when I'm on stage and I went into a customer's office and this, you know, CDO is telling me, you know what? We're not ready for kind of AI, machine learning, predictive analytics, because we can't get our data right. We need to get our data right first. That was 2014. You know, that was 10 years ago. Yep. And, you know, it's still I still get the same feedback from folks. So yeah. It's an ongoing problem, but
it is. I shall not name an organization that I had contact with for many decades who was on, their fourth version of an enterprise data warehouse. Like,
yeah. Okay. That's a fun story. There's a lot of
understand might not be great. Version two should be good, but version four, hang on, at some point in time. Yeah.
Well, I look at it this way, right? There's a lot of, and this is one of the things, the average data executive is in seat for roughly 2 years before they're moving on.
Gotcha.
So it's roughly about 4 months is the standard deviation. So if you think about it, the average, and it takes you a year to be able to get to the
nuance,
the nuance. In effect, most people are going away and you start to understand why that is the case, because it's much easier to discuss, hey, how do I get data from one location to the next? It's a solved problem, right? It's an expensive problem. It's a long-term problem and it's a long-running problem. But no, as you say, if you're going through your fourth one, there's a lot of people that are still going back in time and still trying to get value out of that.
Yeah. Is there a good news story with the chief data officer? Are they moving on and upwards or are they running for the hills and saying never again?
I would say, I think for most organizations, the CDO, and now a lot of times you're starting to see chief data and analytics officer. We're starting to hear noises about the chief AI officer. Mm-hmm. All of these particular roles, they're not going anywhere. I think especially for the CDO, I'm starting to see them more underneath a CIO, or they're going to the Office of Finance. They're not necessarily reporting all the way up. So for them, you have to show your wares. Maybe you don't, you know, you're close to the table, but you're not at the table at the moment. So, but for those CDOs, those CDAOs that are proving out value, guess what? They're the ones pushing these AI projects, you know, whether we're talking about things in the spatial area, such as, you know, doing map analysis, computer vision, you know, even things as simple as, you know, boxing and understanding, you know, the number of cars in our competitors' parking lots, right? Mm-hmm. All the way to the flip side of that, just the basic, how do I get data in and data out? Yeah. But you have to have all of that in order to have a self-sustaining data and AI strategy. Yeah. And if you don't, well, you're going to be looking for a job in, you know, 16 months, right?
I hear you. Last two questions, we've actually girded around the topic. I think you mentioned it there for a second, solved problem. I guess in both our beards, I think we paint on the gray hairs every morning, correct? Yes, yep. They're not really gray hairs. Good, excellent. Glad to hear. there's a lot of belief in starting from scratch. There is a good percentage of a population who says hardcore, notepad, insert tool here.
Mm-hmm.
I shall reach for the book. I'll do it the hard way. Versus, let's skip 90% of that. I've been using the metaphor of gone are the days to have to learn how to understand how chemistry of an internal combustion engine works before you can drive a car.
Right.
I just got rid of my last internal combustion engine vehicle, which is good because when the change oil light came on, I think it was the Seinfeld episode, my mechanic was of the same mold. It's like, Jerry. you should be stopping by the time this light comes on. Then why does the light only come, there's a level of understanding that is either you do want it and you go back to first principles. I know many people who enjoy that, but I'd love your point of view on the new benefit of just saying, given, granted, if there's a red button for it, I'll press it. If there's no button for it, I'll just ignore it. I just want to do the thing and I want to do the thing faster. Mm-hmm. Is that the kind of world that you're seeing more and more of?
I think it is. It's this concept of build and buy, right? So do I build it myself or buy it? And I did a presentation, a few years ago talking about that. And to me, it becomes, is it a bespoke? Is it something that is going to give your organization competitive advantage? Is it something you can't readily find out in the marketplace? Guess what? Go build it. But there are so many solved problems, Andrew, out there that I'll talk ETL for a moment. There are plenty of tools to do ETL and that will do it quickly, but some people will die on the hill that they need to write it in SQL, right?
Yeah.
That's not, that doesn't return value to the business.
No, it's an admirable sideshow to the important superhighway that's right there to your left. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, if I'm doing that work, it makes sense for me. And I think this is where, if I am a leader inside of an organization, I have to understand what is valuable to my organization versus necessarily what is valuable to my people.
Yeah.
I'd love to have that interaction so that they're both the same. But if your team is doing nothing but building stuff, what else could they be doing with that? And guess what? If you can't, then that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. No, look, speed is of the essence. As we're saying, the gap between epochs in the field that we're thankfully being able to, tag along beside, the field is reducing down to less players doing more of the things with a healthy open source copy paste of, teacher student models, low
actually models. I got a good question for you. Do you think we'll see more or less LLMs 2 years from now?
There will be more by number. I think those top 5-10 companies will still be the only ones who can get speed to market. There have been a few initiatives of universities trying to pull together open source funding to, do some mega training on the big foundational models. I haven't seen those come to fruition. And if they have, they definitely haven't hit any leaderboards. So I think it sadly is in the realm of NVIDIA shares are probably the way to go.
Yeah.
It's not financial advice.
But in a gold rush, sell pickaxe. Yeah, pickaxes and shovels.
Yep. Yeah, because we've gone beyond, I don't know how to measure it, centuries, eons of computing time to train these things. Mm-hmm. We've kind of run out of content. There has been a side discussion of, what happens when AI starts to have to read previously written AI as new content fodder, and is that going to start a vicious cycle and race to the bottom? Probably not. I dare say, with having read the entire internet, we can do better with what we've got.
The average LLM sees the same amount of content that a 4-year-old does.
Wow.
So think about that. So all of it's been ingesting, for everything, right?
Yeah.
So to me, that becomes the phase of the LLM. Gotcha. Is computer vision, putting eyes on it, cameras, walking around and understanding.
Yeah.
Then we open up a whole more can of worms.
But that's exactly that just, it.
But if you think about, that's in effect what we're getting today.
Yeah, gotcha.
What are we going to get in 3 years from now?
Well, we've used the metaphor of the early LLMs. Sorry, not LLMs. The early BERT. Mm-hmm. So I've even forgotten half the name of these things.
Yeah, yeah.
BERT was the bidirectional. Anyway,
transformers. Yep. CNNs. You know, all of those.
Yeah. Could finish a sentence. You know, it was handy, but it wasn't great. We quickly got to large models were as good as a primary school user, and then a middle school, and then finally a high school. I think it's safe to say we're at academic tertiary level asterisk in many fields. But to then roll all that metaphor back to, even with all that content of only having, you know, a preschooler's level of content absorption, being able to extrapolate up to those levels. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I wonder what does happen in 5 and 10 years' time when we've got... I'm drawn back to science fiction as always. It's 2001, Space Odyssey. PAL, not irrespective of the letters, were one before IBM. We'll leave that controversy to a different day. But the Arthur C. Clarke's metaphor there was that the creator of that supercomputer had spent almost a decade with it, teaching, training it, talking to it. So perhaps we just do need time, and time will resolve itself.
And the funny thing
is, would be my prediction, though. Surely we're not going to have the plethora of copy paste, teacher student, decimated, smaller versions of the large models will continue. But I don't think we're going to have a random entrant from you or me in our garage going to take over one of the leaders.
I don't think we're going to keep the leaders, but one of the things I talk about is, you know, wisdom of the crowds with people. And I talk to folks as the price of the LLM API tokens will fall, because they will, you know, that's just the nature of, you know, unless energy prices go through the roof over time, the silicon will decrease in price, and we'll be having, you know, H100s and A1, we'll be able to get them a lot cheaper. What will happen is the LLMs, LLMs don't hallucinate the same way, right? So if I can call the same question to four LLMs and then have a separate LLM, so in effect chaining them together to get a response,
yep,
I could probably be pretty confident in that.
Okay.
Right? So to me, that becomes, that wisdom will be one of, you know, just how we use an ensemble of machine learning models. We'll be using an ensemble of queries back from an LLM to understand.
So today we would have an LLM prompted, you are an academic, I want you to respond in this tone. Having those being persistent agents and asking your own personal AI body of knowledge, and then have them battle out for who gets to answer.
Yeah. Well, even just being able to synthesize what four of them talked about, right? And then maybe fine tuning one that basically starts to resolve out when, you know, if there's discrepancies. So to me, that means there'll be even if you look at the biggest models right now, they're not just one model. They're a collection of models underneath.
Yeah.
And we're going to see more and more of it.
Let's pause for a second while dogs get jealous about, I think, my school kids. So your buzz has gone off. My dogs have gone off. All good. Last question then for you, if I can. It's a big one, which may not have an answer, but I guess the last few topics, the last few questions have been leading up to the concept called RAG, which the author acknowledges is, if they had known how important a concept was going to be, they would have given it a better name. RAG is retrieval augmented generation, which is not any help either. Essentially, it's keeping your hot and your cold, keeping your LLM changeable. And when that gets better next month, you can switch it out for the next one, but bringing your own data to an interface and then having you interact with it. Right now, large models, any foundational models, don't have a concept of, well, you or me. They've got a concept of people, black t-shirt, green background, green t-shirt, chatting on a podcast. They won't make a picture of Grant or myself. We can prompt them to get close to Will Smith eating spaghetti, but it's never make me a video of Will Smith eating spaghetti. It's, man, these features, spaghetti on a plane, go. RAG is the thing that actually brings those together and lets you have your own data set safe, brought forward, and then you keep on switching out what is the latest and greatest front end to be able to interrogate. Open question to you, and is that something that Dataiku can help with to smash together all that digital twin of your own organization, smashed together with the latest and greatest? Love you.
Yep, we're doing that right now. So we've actually, you know, RAG, when I talk to customers, RAG is in effect kind of, you've got your base answer, you've got your RAG, and then it's out to fine tune if you really need, you know, to get it right. Fine tuning is an incredibly expensive, you know, to do. But for most organizations, RAG is good enough. So last year, even with Dataiku, we worked with a LG Chemical in Korea for their health and safety data. So help it, you know, build a RAG inside of the tool in order to query that with their own external application. So for us, this is, I see RAG especially being a way to provide a lot of value very, very quickly, yeah, to an organization, being able to ask those questions very fast. I would say this, there is a question right now of context length, because in order to use a RAG, you have to, in effect, break up different elements of it. So you're chunking them or, yeah, batching them for most part. And that, and in the end, what you're asking it to do is do basically do a Google search inside of it. Here are the five things that approximate your question. Give that to the LLM, and then the LLM responds. It's not a perfect way of dealing with things. So for me, this is one of those where I'm going to watch this space. We absolutely can do it, and I don't think it's going to go anywhere anytime, yeah, within the next 2 years, just because context length.
Yeah, gotcha.
But is it the be all and the end all? I don't think so. I think it's a waypoint. It's going to be it's a waypoint. In much the same way as settlers are moving, you know, in the United States, to use my, they moved west, and you'd have different outposts. RAG's just going to be a really significant.
As long as no one dies of dysentery, that's,
yeah,
I'll take that metaphor.
Yeah. So for me, that's what RAG is right now. It's a way to get a heck of a lot of value. Excellent, very, thanks, very quickly.
But, yeah. But not the final result. Gotcha. Yeah.
And the more important thing, restricting down what the LLM can talk about, right? So being able to say, this is the data, this is your data set to work with. That is probably one of the most important aspects of it.
Yeah, this is your corpus. Answer from
this there. Is your corpus.
Go. Yeah. Grant, thank you so much. Absolutely awesome to have a chat with you. We do need to do a follow-up. By all means, let's get you back as a regular and do
sure, absolutely, Grant,
at any point in time. Where do people find you these days, or where would you like people to find you, or any call to action you'd like us leave us with, yeah, for personal or Dataiku?
So if anybody's interested, you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm typically posting something, you know, every few days or so that I find interesting. You may or may not, but that's the best place to get in touch with me. If you are interested in this space and your organization is trying to figure out, hey, what do I just do with analytics, all the way up to how do I get everybody working together, dataiku.com. And feel free to try out free trial of the tool, or even if you just kind of a hacker. I know, Andrew, when you were going through school, you can download Dataiku into your notebook and, you know, work on it locally.
Yeah, it's the closest thing to magic there for many, many years. There are other magic tools like LLMs being able to do all your code for you that, you know, by all means, that's the one to watch of a full-on architecture enterprise tool versus is there a magic, I won't invoke any of my voice assistants right now, but, you know, what happens when even that gets abstracted out? But no, Dataiku is a brilliant tool, and I heartily advocate for it. It saved my bacon many times. Grant, thank you so much for that. Enjoy the rest of your day. Cheers for your chat.
Cheers. Thanks so much, Andrew, for the time.
No worries. Well, that's all of us from Spatial. We'll catch you next week with another special guest from a different part of the world. We won't be daylight next time I'm chatting to you. For all of us here at Spatial, though, thanks for your time, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Bye-bye.
If you'd like more news and insights about Spatial AI, or have a story or interesting topic you'd like us to cover, reach out to us. Better yet, come and join the community at Spatial. All the links are in the show notes.